Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 8th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart? I'm not a cardiologist, but if you just let me know what's going on, the feeling side of it, not necessarily the biology of it, but the feelings part, we can talk it out. I have small ears, but they're good at listening. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. So I'm recording this back in northern New Jersey, back in my apartment. We were on location the last time in beautiful downtown Schenectady. But now, back in Jersey, I'm recording this. NFL playoffs, the wild card. I guess it's the wild card game. Giants and Packers are playing right now as I'm recording this thing. The Packers just scored basically on a Hail Mary to end the first half. And if the Giants lose, they're going to blame everything on Odell Beckham and his wide receiving core. They're going to blame it on them for going to Miami and having a good time with their shirts off. So I don't really have a dog in this fight. I just hope that the Giants can at least win this game. I mean, I hope that they win so I don't have to hear. Because I live in New York. I live in the New York area, and I really don't want to hear sports talk radio. I don't really want to hear them talking about that shit, because that's, come on. Let these guys have fun. And I was listening to it before I put it on mute. Was it Joe Buck and Troy Aikman? I think they're calling the game. And Troy Aikman said, I wouldn't do that. I would never go out and party. Whatever, Troy. All right, dude, whatever. Really who I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Russell Wilson and really Dak Prescott. I mean, the black quarterbacks, you know what I'm saying? That's what I'm rooting for. And Pittsburgh, because they got a black coach. So that's one of those three teams. If they win, I'll be happy. I'm noticing something. Like, why do black-themed McDonald's commercials look like? Why do they kind of look come off across as like black people meet commercials instead of McDonald's? It's just always some seductive thing about it. Oh, here's a McCafe. You know, just like, all right. They just kind of seem like, I don't know. It's a new one in particular. There was one where this guy, I was halfway paying attention to it. I sound like my mom. My mom will say, oh, you know, I saw this thing that's happening. I didn't get all the story, but there's a thing that's happening that you should be aware of that I didn't get all the information from. My mom does that a lot. Gotta love her. But yeah, it just reminded me, like, it was very sensual. Like one of those dating commercials, black people meet. All right. So this is episode 201. I have a special guest, Leah Bonema, special return guest, comedian, actor, writer. She's back on the show. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. I'm fighting a cold right now. I had to cancel a show, but one because it was snowing really bad. It was really bad. I was excited to do the show, but it was snowing really bad. And I was like, I'm not driving all the way into the city and just to get in, just to be in a shit show of traffic. And I couldn't do it. I love the game, but not that much. But comedy was good this week. I did a show, the Comedy Shop. in Mount Arlington, New Jersey. That was a lot of fun. I featured for Teddy Daniels. Mike Adams was the host out of Philly. And it was fun. Like, it was a really good time. And I'll give you a movie review right now. And then we'll get to Leah. I'll blab a little bit, then we'll get to Leah. So before the show, I drove down to the gig, like down to Mount Arlington right after work, and I went to go see Hidden Figures, and I was really excited to see it, because I didn't know anything about it. So I'll read you guys the blurb. I thought that I prepped this, but apparently I didn't, or maybe I just, anyway, so I'm going to read you the Google synopsis. Okay, here we go. Three brilliant African-American women at NASA, Katherine Johnson, played by Taraji P. Henson, Dorothy Vaughn, Octavia Spencer, and Mary Jackson, Janelle Monáe, serve as the brains behind one of the greatest operations in history, the launch of astronaut John Glenn into orbit, a stunning achievement that restored the nation's confidence, turned around the space race, and galvanized the world. I don't know if I'm reading this bad, if I'm a bad reader, or if this isn't written well enough. I don't know. But you get the gist of it. I didn't know anything about these women at all, these women involved in NASA. And I saw a couple of think pieces about, we shouldn't learn about this, about black history in the movies. I think in some ways that's true. I mean, I used to do a bit about like Black History Month, how, you know, it should be just a part of the everyday curriculum, and it really should be. But it was a really good movie. I was somewhat skeptical because I was like, okay, this is going to be a history lesson, and is this PG? This is a PG movie, and the racism isn't going to be as lit as I would like it to be. But I was pleasantly surprised. Well, the acting is good. Like, Taraji, Octavia Spencer is an Oscar winner. Janelle Monáe is becoming someone who's basically becoming a star with her appearance in Moonlight. And now this just, this movie was just full of black girl magic. I got emotional a couple times, partly because I had sinus stuff going on, but there were moments that I got, like, there was a couple intense scenes where I was just like, oh my God, they're really going for it in this, like with the racism. I saw where some of my peers thought it was a little too light on the racism. I was concerned. Kirsten Dunst is in this movie, aging white starlet. I was nervous that she was going to be really racist and that was going to piss me off. Obviously, there were moments where I was like, yeah, she racist as fuck right now, talking to Octavia like this young. And it almost reminded me, I'm trying to wrap my brain around how to talk about it, just as far as like, it was like a version of Kirsten Dunst, like the Kirsten Dunst in Bring It On would be a little disappointed in the way that Hidden Figures Kirsten Dunst acted in the beginning, because Kirsten Dunst in Bring It On was a little more proactive. And even though she came across as a white savior, Gabrielle Union and the Clovers, they put her in check. You know what I'm saying? She eventually came around in the movie, but it was interesting. I don't know. It just, you know how black people, like, we think that characters are the same, and I don't know that we don't think that, but we don't really remember the characters' names like that. Some of us don't. I shouldn't just say all of us. I should not make a blanket statement like that. But, the movie worked on a lot of levels, man. It was educational. It was emotionally compelling. And just the fact that these women were so empowered, like, they just wanted to fucking do math. Like, that's that's like, and then I was thinking, like, this happened, this was in Hampton, Virginia, and a lot of those, a lot of HBCUs just had these really fucking smart black people, and then black women. It wasn't much of a surprise. I mean, because I went to school with black women, like, growing up, and they seemed to just, then I weren't black women, they were black girls, but I just remember them being smart. A lot of them being just being women. I'm not trying to sound like I'm placating, but women do mature faster. There's some oftentimes smarter than boys, guys, or whatever. I really liked it. I really liked that not only were these women intelligent, they were smart. I liked their role reversal with the black men in their lives being supportive, you know, like just being like supportive husbands. Like, I know you want to do this thing, and without giving away too many plot points, but I know you want to do this thing, and I'm going to support you because I love you, and you have my blessing to just do what you need to do and handle your business. I thought that was dope. It just made me feel good. It was just like a really feel good movie. I think it's worth seeing. It was more than just like one of those educational. It was, you know how, like, and I think we get into this when I talk to Leah, when you just have a movie that has these images of a maligned, subjugated group of people on screen, and just the fact that they're there is powerful in and of itself, and sometimes that's enough for people. But I think this movie exceeded that, where it was these women, they were three-dimensional, and it just worked on a lot of levels. I was sitting in front of a mother and what I later found out was a son, because it was like a little kid, and, you know, little boys kind of have high voices, but they're just kind of talking during the movie, not almost to a point where they were annoying, but excuse me, they weren't really annoying, but I found out what was going on. This mom took her son to this movie, and he was asking her questions after certain things, and I think that's what needs to happen. And they were white. I should have mentioned that. They're white. He said, "What does that mean? Like, what does this mean?" And she was kind of like, you know, whispering to him and telling him, "Hey, this is, you know," because back then people didn't blah, da 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 da, and, you know, like telling them stuff. And I think that's what a movie like this is good for. Except it actually worked on, like, it just kind of crossed the board, and the message that I was trying to send, the entertainment. It just worked on a number of levels. If I can, you know. Also, two things. I think Kevin Costner is one of the greatest. He's got to be one of the greatest white saviors in American cinema. With this movie, like, there's this really dope scene. I'm not going to give anything away. Maybe the next time whenever I talk to somebody who has seen this movie, and we'll probably talk about it and spoil a couple things. But there's one really visceral scene that was great. And then just remember seeing him in McFarlane, USA, like helping those like Mexican kids run track. That was dope. Black or white, when he was like who's a white grandfather for this black girl. That was a good movie. And then I tweeted that he was like the greatest white savior in American history, in American cinema. And shout out to Jenna Corrado, friend of the podcast. And she was like, "Oh, what about Bodyguard?" And I was like, "Yeah, that works too. That obviously works. I didn't even think about that movie." So he's got to be up there. He's definitely up there. And I know this has been the year 2016, and then I feel like 2017 will, the residue of 2016 for Mahershala Ali will come into hopefully award season. He's a great actor. He's a very good actor. He's also, it doesn't seem like he takes a role unless he gets to take care of a kid that's not his characters. Like, when Fonte a couple weeks, Fonte on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, maybe like Thanksgiving time, he was tweeting about Moonlight, and he compared Moonlight to The Place Beyond the Pines. And it made me go back and watch that movie. He's like, why did you say that? And he's like, the time jumps and all that. And I was like, oh, yeah. And Mahershala Ali plays a dude, another dude who takes care of kids that aren't his, a kid that isn't his. So he does that in Moonlight, The Place Beyond the Pines, and now, and it's evident in Hidden Figures. So that's a pretty cool thing also, just like a little sidebar or whatever. So it was just a really good feel-good movie. There was a really, I think, three to four powerful moments where it was just like, man, it was a couple. No, it was more than that. It was a couple, but there was one moment that I didn't know was gonna come. And when it did come, I was like, holy shit. I was like, yes. And it got to the point where I was like, okay, now we got a real movie. Now I'm locked in, that I wasn't expecting to see in a movie of this stature that was just like dealing with that schism. So that was good. So I highly recommend it. I highly recommend Hidden Figures. And after I did my show, I went to Fuddruckers. Because I had to go. It was a Fuddruckers 2 miles away. I've cut down on a lot of my fat boy shit for the new year. I'm just going to try to do, like, if there's something that I would like to have, I don't think I'm just going to get, like, a shitty burger from McDonald's. If I'm going to pay good money for a burger, I'm going to get a nice burger. Like, Fuddruckers was great. And I think that I could make a monthly pilgrimage to Fuddruckers, because I get off work in time to beat traffic to get out to the Fuddruckers near me, this closest to me, and then I can make like a, and I could go to the movies. So maybe I'll do that. I don't know. But I've got some chicken marinating in the refrigerator that I'm going to put in the oven. And that's going to be good. I'm going to have that, you know, put it on my salads, you know, put some salad and all that, you know, handle that for the week for work. And so it's going to be all good, man. Okay. All right. Enough of my blabbing. Let's bring in Aaliyah. Aaliyah Bonema is a terrific comedian. I remember just looking up the episodes. She was on episode 36. So she was one of the first batch of people that I talked to when I started this podcast almost 4 years ago, and we had her, but wanted to have her back to just see what she was up to. And then to talk about Rogue One and to talk about, and we also talked about, the recent passing of Carrie Fisher. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Aaliyah Bonema. You're treating me like royalty. This, Sakit Tumi cake. It's great. Like, I'm a big, people kind of get really, I don't know if they get really like arrogant, not arrogant, that's the bad, they get kind of like during the fall winter season when all the pumpkin stuff comes out, the cinnamony stuff, like, everybody's going to get their cinnamon latte and their pumpkin. I like cinnamon.
Oh, I love cinnamon.
Cinnamon muffins? Oh my God.
I put cinnamon in my coffee
all the time.
You like on the top, mm-hmm. If you put a little cinnamon on the top, so then when the water goes through, it just kind of gets the hint of cinnamon.
Yeah,
I've never had actually a pumpkin cinnamon latte or a pumpkin, okay. So I don't know what that tastes like, but
it's good. I mean, I think I know Wawa has them, like when you're on the road and stuff. Well, near, and I live in Jersey, so there's Wawa's around. Stop and Shop, I like their muffins. Like, I shouldn't be eating them. I normally go for the lemon poppy seed, but when they have cinnamon, it's amazing. Or pumpkin, it's great.
I love all
this products. This is great. And you got me the La Croix sparkling water. I never had this before.
It's the cheapest sparkling water at Rite Aid.
And is it like, so you're telling me that this has like been a thing for a while?
Well, it's been out. And then I guess it got really popular. Uh-huh. And I didn't even realize it was popular.
Okay.
It's just, I'm trying not to drink soda, and I wanted to keep the bubbles. And this is the one, like, if you like one of the flavors, this is the only flavored one that doesn't taste like fake flavoring.
Okay. All right. Because I've seen people on Instagram, like, take pictures of their...
I don't even know when that started happening.
I'm like, is this, like, white people's Four Loko? Is it their, like, Kool-Aid? What
it... I don't know. I don't...
You don't know.
I didn't get...
You didn't...
What was... I was just like, oh, I do this,
it's
too.
It's like I'm making you stand up for your whole race. Like, what is it with you white people?
No, I didn't realize it was happening. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, I do like that. Uh-huh. And I am white. I haven't taken a picture of it yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's... I've been having it.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm exposed to a whole new world. And it's good. And I got the... Got the Yoda Star Wars glass.
You know, it's also that I quit smoking. And so
okay,
I'm trying
good for
to,
you.
Thank you. Find things that are like a treat.
Mm-hmm.
So I drink a lot more bubbly water.
Okay.
Or anything that's sort of like a, I'm going to get up and have this now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that doesn't have calories and it doesn't fuck up my teeth or give me some form of aspartame brain poisoning. So.
Yeah.
And you still like to pop it and, you know, it feels like a little time out.
Yeah. I try not to, like I was telling you before we started, I like to have my favorite drink now has been Canada Dry. I'm kind of turning into my dad. Like my parents just drink ginger ale.
Well, it's good.
It's just really good. And it's not Schweppes, not this other. It's got to be Canada Dry. And occasionally I like a sun-kissed orange or a grape. And I usually do that on the weekends.
Well, it's definitely a treat. I mean, yeah. I love sun-kissed orange. Oh my God!
I'm whittling. I'm getting to the point now where I can't do this fast. I can't do this fast. I'm getting too old. I'll be 37 in next month in February.
Happy almost birthday!
Thank you. And so it's like I gotta get like Dion Cole, the comedian, has a bit where he's talking about, you know what it tastes like. Stop eating that shit. You know what it tastes like, and he's right. And then like when you get excited to have your treat. And it's not good. It's the worst.
Mm-hmm. Or you've had too much and then it doesn't taste like a treat anymore.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh my God. So.
Well, I go hard at Christmas. Like Christmas is my favorite holiday. I love it. I love the lights and the music and the food. And my parents are very good cooks.
And you go up to Bangor, Maine?
Oh, they're not in Bangor. They're in northern.
Why did I think Bangor? Did you used to live there?
No.
Why did we talk? We talked about that the last time you were on.
That's just because it's one of the big cities.
Is it?
I mean, one of the two.
Because I remember we were talking, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a Lord of the Rings thing. Bangor, Maine.
It is in Maine, and it's...
Okay, now I feel like a dummy. Like, I'm trying to tell you where... No, you're from there, Aaliyah.
I'm not.
Okay, where is the town? Where are you?
From near this ski resort called Sunday River. So okay. It's just, like, north of Portland.
Okay, how far is that, like, from here? Like, is your... Because you were telling me you had to drive and...
Yeah, my
and
parents drive me to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get a bus.
Okay, and you were on the road all day yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually I'll fly, but I missed the plane, buying my plane ticket.
Mm-hmm. What do they make for Christmas?
They make like real meals, and I feel like I've gotten bad at cooking. So we had manicotti.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Baked stuffed manicotti. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And then we had obviously turkey with stuffing and cornbread stuffing. We made a separate one and all the potatoes, like the sweet potatoes, the mashed potatoes.
Wow.
We go all in.
Who goes? Is it just the three of you or is it?
Me, my dad, and my boy. Me, my dad, my mom, and my boyfriend.
Okay. So you guys just get down.
And my grandparents always used to come up. It was like the holiday. It was like the time that everybody. So it was always, it was just like a really big deal.
Yeah.
And so we've kind of kept it.
That's kind of like how my mom does most of the cooking and my dad helps. Like the last 7 or 8 years, we fry the turkey for Christmas and Thanksgiving. So I just, they give that duty to me. Like they season it or whatever, and then I just like dump it in there.
How long does it fry for?
Like an hour, depending on the weight of the turkey,
right?
And I forget.
Do you bake it at all first?
No,
just deep fry. Then it cuts like, all the way through.
Yeah, huh. You just put it in peanut oil, and then it's a like a butterball deep fryer, and it's just and it's great. And we haven't deviated from that in a long. I don't think they've put one in the oven in a long time.
I just love the way it looks with like the it's so good.
It's really good. And she did when they did macaroni and cheese different kinds of greens. Thanksgiving they did cornbread. So yeah, and then I take a plate over to my uncle's because, you know,
you're a good person.
My parents are good. I don't think I'm okay. I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. I think I'm on my way to being one. I think I'm a work in progress.
Well, I think that is the mark of a good person.
Do you ever feel like you're an asshole sometimes and then you have to check yourself? Or you're being one and then you're just like, wait a minute, you're kind of being...
I'm trying to actually be more of an asshole.
Okay. I think I understand that. Expound on that.
Because I feel like I'm always so worried about how everybody else is doing that then I'm like... What do I think about that?
Yeah.
What did I want to do?
Sure.
In some circumstances, I feel like I'm probably an asshole, and then I'm trying really hard to reflect on it, apologize, change my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I feel like I need to be a little bit more of a pro me.
Yeah.
And not and feel like I'm at an age where my friends are at an age where everybody can stick up for themselves. If somebody doesn't want something or didn't want to do something or didn't feel right, they'll tell me. And then I can fix it. But me like second guessing and worrying about everything is not helping anybody.
Yeah, I'm just trying to let go of like anxiety. Always just kind of anxiety about even fun things. Like I'm doing a show this weekend, in upstate. And I'm excited, but there's just like, oh, and am I going to get there early? So I can, my ritual is like to see a movie before the show. And then I think I'm somewhere on the spectrum.
Well, I get very anxious about going. About everything like that too.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's like I look into you for help. You're like, Chris, I don't really know.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. It's just a thing. Like I just
we're artists.
I think maybe that's what it is.
And I mean that may put us on a spectrum.
Yeah, I think to a certain degree you have to account for that. Yeah, that's true.
Like someone was in a conversation recently where someone's like, "You're so sensitive," and it's like, "Yeah, I am." Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's genuinely a personality trait.
Right.
I try not to be sensitive about things that have nothing to do with me or that were just a joke, but like, I'm definitely sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get waylaid from like, you know, the simplest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Like, it's just, someone, do you know Chrissy Mayer?
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a what I thought was a really funny joke on Facebook yesterday about, and it dealt with the rape and you know, all the stuff that's going on in the community. And she said,
if you have, if you have time to get raped, you're not doing enough spots.
Exactly. And I just looked at that and I gave her the surprise face, like that face. And I just like, punched a bunch of keys on my phone as to be like, oh my God, like this is hilarious. And this is, and it's kind of like, wow. I don't know. It was just really funny to me. And then just, and I had to take myself, you know, undo the notifications so I wouldn't get the people arguing. But it was just interesting to get a female perspective like that, that was just like, hey, boom. And I was like,
Well, I also think she was just joking.
Yeah, it was just a joke. Yeah, yeah. And it was a fresh take. But then other people, you know, I got hit, I got abused, and this happened to me. And I just like, well, when do you not? I don't know. I just felt, I don't know, it's a way to see the humor in that and to see it for what it is, like on the surface level, this being a very funny joke because it's inside baseball and then it's also a little bit universal. I just think it was a well-crafted update.
Yeah.
And then, but once you put it out there, it's not, I guess it's not hers anymore to a certain point because everybody's going to attach
their own feelings to it.
And that could be with anything.
Yep.
So,
I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, yeah.
The art leaves the artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what people can take personally. Like, I don't take things like that personally.
Yeah.
I take things more like, you know, I saw a pigeon with a broken leg on the side of the sidewalk and I literally didn't leave it for 5 hours because I was afraid somebody would hit it.
Yeah.
But I don't take jokes. I see what people are saying, like, this happened to me, and I feel like this is... But I also feel like Chrissy's making a joke about the... You know, I don't...
Yeah.
I'm not a person that takes other people's jokes and then makes it personal about me,
right.
But I understand that some people want to dialogue about it.
Right. If you guys could see the face that Leah just made, it was hilarious. You're like, yeah, no. Well... One of the reasons why I wanted you back on the show is because this is kind of fresh. This just happened. You being a woman, I wanted to know, when it happened, what are your thoughts on Drake and J-Lo being together?
Oh, you switched it up for me. You know, I took a social media break when I was in Maine. And so I was off until last night. And then, you know, I got inundated. I mean, people contacted me about Gary Fisher. But
we'll get to that.
So I knew about that. But nothing else did I know about. Because it's the only thing somebody texted me about. So then when I turned my phone on, that was one of the first things I saw. The picture they both posted.
Yeah.
And my immediate thought was like, awesome.
Yeah. I was like, good for them if they're happy.
Yeah. And also, I feel like... Well, she's like 17 years his elder.
Okay.
And I just feel like she's like has smorgasborded men. You know what I mean? She's really a fine sampling of like all our hot, you know, young men.
Yeah.
And I think good for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Let her
get it. Get it.
Get it, girl. But seriously,
how do you feel about it?
Oh, I just kind of wanted to see what you thought about a random thing.
I think you were thinking about it.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, like, you just kind of have a crush. Like, I had a crush on her.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
She's hot. People try to talk shit about her singing, but it was at one point in her career where she had the number one movie in the country and the number one album in the country at the same time. I think it was The Wedding Planner, and then I think it was On the Six, maybe her first one. Like, I'm like a J-Lo biographer.
Yeah.
But I believe it was one of those... I think it was that combination. And I don't think she gets enough credit for her acting. I mean, Selena's one thing, but like a movie like Out of Sight.
Out of Sight was great. I thought Enough was great.
Yeah. And funny that you mentioned that. That was the last movie that my mom, dad, and I all went to see together.
Oh, really?
And I was trying to get them to go see Fences, but they don't like to go out there in their 70s. But yeah, that was a movie that we all went to see. And I liked her last one. Obviously, it was silly. Like, my ex-hot...
Dustin watched that. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. But now it's up on HBO. I'm
okay,
watch it.
It's fine. Like, it's entertaining, you know? It's like, she's hot.
I thought she was great in Anaconda.
I vaguely remember that.
Just remember that because it was, like, right before she really blew up, and she still had curly hair, and she's in a tank top with no bra on, and it's, like, a candlelight night, and she's, like, sweating and, you know, thinking about science. And then they're like, I see nips.
I gotta revisit that. A young J-Lo. Yeah, I think she's a star. Like, she's great.
She's worked hard. She's reinvented herself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind it one bit. You know, it's just interesting now. Like, people that you followed when you're young, and now they're getting a little older, and that means you're getting older.
Yeah, which is really hard for me to accept.
It's weird. Like athletes that you find out they're like a year or two older than you. It's just like, oh God. You just think about it. It's just kind of like, yeah, I'm getting old.
Yeah.
You know, but speaking of nostalgia, I wanted to have you on again to talk to you, but you were one of the first guests on the show. And since Star Wars Rogue One came out, and when I reached out to you, I was like, oh, I got to get Leah to be on the show. And then Carrie Fisher passed away Tuesday. She passed away this week. Yeah. As we're recording, she passed away. Your thoughts? Like, how do you, like, reflecting on her career, what she meant to you as a kid growing up and a woman, everything?
I mean, I think, the whole circumstances, like when they said she had a heart attack on the plane, I got really upset. Not that I don't feel sad that celebrities pass. I feel... You know, they've shared their art and lives with us, and I understand people feeling an attachment. I don't often get moved to, but I got really upset about Leonard Nimoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got really upset again when Carrie Fisher when they said she had a heart attack. And then I was like, I was following up on the news, which just isn't something that I do. In this case like that. And then I was like, oh, I really felt like she was going to be fine.
Right.
And then I had my phone off because I was spending the day with my mom or whatever. And then actually Mateo Lane texted me because we always talk about Star Wars. And it was like a sad face. And I was like, what happened? And then he was like, Carrie Fisher died. I was like, no.
Oh, man,
and then I actually cried. And then I think, you know, and then it's crazy that her mom died the next day. It's just... attachment.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Carrie Fisher, I feel like she was one of our first. I mean, taking, we're not obviously not including like Sigourney Weaver and Alien.
But, yeah, for our generation, she had to be the first. Alien came out when?
I think right before. When was Alien?
So Star Wars was 77?
77. I feel like Carrie Fisher was the first. Also, Star Wars isn't sci-fi. Star Wars is fantasy. I think women in sci-fi, which is where I would put Star Trek in, have always been allowed to be slightly edgier and thoughtful. In fantasy, I feel like Carrie Fisher's, yeah, she's very good looking, and we have the bikini shot in Jedi, but in New Hope, A, she's sarcastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She's dry. She doesn't have like a high, like dumb, not that people with high voices are dumb. You know
what
I mean?
She's grounded.
Yeah. Very just like she didn't need to be a people pleaser. You know what I mean? She didn't care if you thought that Han thought she was snotty. You know what I mean? We were going to do it her way. You know, we were getting shit done. She had to get those. I felt like that was one of our first solid female characters like that. She was, you know, I thought that was so cool. She was a leader.
Mm-hmm. Ended up being a general.
Yeah.
A lot of people kind of forget that. But obviously, Princess Leia is iconic, but then she, you know, in The Force Awakens, she's a general, and that's how she ended up.
And she, yeah, she's, I mean, she was like could take her gender out of it, save the, you know, bikini. But I mean, Han Solo's got sexy shots too, you know what I mean? It's hers is just a little more nude, but I mean, she's, her character is a full character. She's making choices. She's believes in the cause. She's making sacrifices for it. She's, you know, has a great sense of humor. She's willing to not let people like her to get the job done, which I feel often female roles aren't allotted that. And I thought that she just did that so well, and it was a great role. And obviously, she's a part of a cast that was iconic. And then in her later life, I feel like, you know, with Postcards from the Edge, she wrote that about her relationship with her mom and her struggles with drugs and alcoholism and stardom. And I thought that was a really important. It was an amazing script. And then I thought it was an important discourse. I feel like she's been on the cutting edge of discourse, you know, within her one woman show, Wishful Drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, she talked about getting sober and, you know, making mistakes. And then she's very funny. And then I felt like when people lashed out at her gaining weight, she like really told people to go fuck themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a real person. And
yeah.
I really thought she kept it funny and also was, you know, cutting and had, you know, let people know that like, you can't fucking treat women like this. Very intelligent. I just felt like she really has always been on the cusp of being a really great role model.
Yeah.
Not on the cusp. She has been a great role model, but she's always ahead of these things, you know?
Yeah. I think I just looking back, I mean, I, as a kid, like now that these last two movies have come out, I felt kind of disenchanted with the prequels.
Oh, definitely.
It was just kind of like, but then these last two kind of just, The Force Awakens just, there's definitely a lot of nostalgia attached to it, but I tried to act like I was above it all, and then I ended up buying like 6 or 7 action figures. So it was just kind of like, she was definitely a huge part of my childhood, and that story, that series has just been, it was really iconic, and it definitely, it just made me feel bad. It was just like, God, man, 60.
Was pretty young. 16.
It's pretty young, yeah. And you know, I know we lost George Michael and all these celebrities that die, and it just made me think. You know, of course, with our Facebook timelines, you have comedians that are always pontificating. Well, you guys are being always wanting to be contrarians, and then sometimes we kind of lose sense of like, hey, I'm a human. There's a heartbeat in this thing, and just hearing you talk, it made me think about the first celebrity death that got me, and I think it was River Phoenix when he died. I think it was like 91, and I was like 11, and Stand By Me was the first rated R movie that I saw, and he was like the cool brooding guy, and he had issues and all this stuff, and I was like, wow, this guy's really good. Like, and I think like if I really think back, that's the guy, that one of the dudes that got me into wanting to be in show business. This guy was not that much older than me and was, you know, doing his thing. And I think that was for me. I was like, God. And it and I think it's okay to be sad.
Yeah. I feel like as comics, we don't let ourselves have real feelings sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think these are huge parts of our childhood. And
yeah.
Also, they're people and they have families that love them. And, you know, it's any kind of... But they're parts of how we remember ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I'm not going to pretend it doesn't affect me.
Right. And one thing you kind of alluded to that I think is important too, if I get my brain right, I can remember it. The fact that, and I guess we'll edit this out when I actually get to it. Oh my God. The fact that, oh my God, Leo. Be affected by the death. Oh my God. What's wrong with me?
It's raining.
Oh God. I'm getting old, Leah. The fact that the death affects you and it's okay to be sad. It's maybe I'll get to it later. I don't know.
Was it a person? Was it a thought?
You made me think about River Phoenix. We talked about him and it was hold on. I'm gonna we'll come back. It'll come back like when you were talking about some other profound stuff. But I just think it's important. Oh, I think I know what it is. It's a part of your life. Oh, it's so close. I see the thought. It's so close, and it's not. And when I get to it, it's not even going to be that great. You think about it, it makes you feel a certain way. Comics. Oh my God. I don't have it. We'll come back to it. It sucks that she's dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, I think anytime someone dies, it also we all selfishly look at our own mortality.
Yeah, I know what it is. It's like you spoke to this, and you can celebrate what they did. Like an artist that is great, that has had an impact. It's sad that they're dead, but then you can still look back and celebrate all the really great things that they did. Like they left something behind. Like even if somebody has an untimely death, this is corny as fuck. But it makes me think, it's like this is so corny. But
it's not kind of, corny.
But it makes me think about like Collateral Beauty, the Will Smith movie that everybody fucking hated. But I liked it.
Oh, I won't go see it.
I know you weren't good. That's too sappy for you. I know you're not going to. Because you made fun of me the last time about the stuff that I liked. But it's like when you have this horrible, when a person dies, they did leave behind all of this great work. And I think it kind of forces us as artists to want to leave some type of impact behind.
Yeah.
So that's just all. That's something that I think about when somebody dies, like, you know, Prince, David Bowie, like look at all the work that those guys did and look at all the people they inspired.
Yeah. I mean, they've changed people's lives.
Yeah. And like people that I admire, you know, like even though I remember saying when Prince died, I said, you know, I liked him. I thought he was great. But all these other people, musicians that I really enjoy, they were inspired by that guy. And then they brought me like beautiful music. I think it's something to consider for all you people that are so cynical.
I also think that a lot of the people that affect us are people that who inspired us to feel like it was okay to be ourselves.
Yes.
Like I feel like Carrie Fisher, her character was strong and sarcastic and all the things I like mm-hmm. in an action or fantasy person mm-hmm. in a woman. And then her off stage or off screen, she opened up about her mistakes and made jokes about people and didn't let people talk shit about her body. And
yeah.
Which I feel like a lot of times women aren't allowed to make mistakes or we're right. supposed to be ashamed of things we did. And she was like, go, you know, basically like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And like, obviously she's not, you know, she acknowledges things she has done, but she doesn't, you know, Wishful Drinking is talking about going through all of these things, but she's not sweeping it under, you know what I mean? So I feel like artists and Prince, I feel like was like, I'm gonna do my own thing. You know what yeah. I mean? I'm all of these things. And I feel like people or a lot of artists who I feel touch my life are artists who have been like, you can do your own thing. You can mm-hmm. and own it. And it's something to be celebrated.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of people don't. I guess not a lot of people, but I think it's something that's lost. And when you kind of remember these artists, like, yeah, it's sad that they're gone, but we were fortunate enough to, you know,
have them. I also think maybe it's because I've spent a lot of time acting like I don't care about stuff, and mm-hmm. I really do care about probably everything, so I might as well just own it.
Do you think that comes as you get older, like just as an adult, like as you mature, is it just like, no, I'm gonna kind of let some of these walls down a little bit?
Well, I think also it's part of being a comic is mm-hmm. Letting things that are, you know, making light of things or mm-hmm. being, I mean, it is important to be able to laugh at things.
Right.
Because I think that's how we deal and heal. But I'm in that, fine with admitting I care about things. Yeah. I don't know if it's with age or if it's just my journey or.
Yeah. I mean, I've come to the point, got to the point where it's just like, hey, I like this thing. And it's not even trying to be a contrarian, but it's like, when I saw Collateral Beauty, I was like, okay, it can't be that bad.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I just also, I have to cap my, willingness to have emotions at a certain point.
Oh, yeah. Like, I thought that it, I mean, there were moments where it almost got me. Like, movies that are really geared to making you cry, like, that I thought I was going to cry, but I didn't. But I did feel something.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I see a football player go to a sick kid's hospital room, and I'm just like, and then sometimes I had Sue Funk on the show a few weeks ago, and they were just saying like, oh, you get to the point where I'm feeling this emotion, I'm crying, oh my god, I'm still human, like there's a heartbeat in there, because you can just kind of, just in life, being in the city or
shutting down,
like you kind of get beat up, or you kind of just try to put up these guards and have this exterior where I'm tough and nothing gets to me, and then when something pierces through, it's like, oh, I feel sad, but I'm kind of glad that I'm feeling these types of emotions.
Well, you gotta let them out somewhere. Yeah. So I think movies are, because we can't let it out in our everyday life. Right. New York is too much.
Right.
And then on stage, we have to sort of cut our losses with certain things. We've mm-hmm. decided to make jokes about certain things. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And I feel like in movies and television, we can let that down.
Yeah.
I also think back to what you said. I think for me, I was more aware of my tenderness, I think it was, before. And then for a while, I got sort of hard around certain things. And now I'm going back to it. I think it was actually, I used to be more, and I sort of covered it up. And then now I'm like, this is really a part of who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I just think, like, doing this podcast for the last 4 years and actually just talking to different types of people, and I'm finding, like, and most of us are around the same age, and it's coming to the point where, like, I'm noticing as I get older, I just feel like I'm a little more comfortable with who I am, and also I can see that there's shit that I need to change. You know what I mean? So it's like having that everyday struggle or conflict with myself trying to evolve.
I don't think that what you were saying earlier about like going to a show early and thinking about, oh, am I going to get there early to do my thing? Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. I think that's, people have their rituals.
Yeah.
And I think it's normal. And
yeah.
Wanting to make sure that you want to get there in enough time. Mm-hmm. I do the same thing where I'll worry, am I going to have enough? And I think maybe for me personally, it's good for me to find a way to not have the worry and just be like, you know that you'll feel better if you do these things before you get there.
Yeah.
So schedule in enough time. And then once I've decided I'm going to do it and planned it out, then let it go. My problem is I'll bring it back and then be like, you decided this.
Right.
It's already, why do you keep bringing it back and thinking about it?
Yeah. I remember because the last time I was upstate, I got there early and I found out there's like, I love independent movie theaters. I love like old movie houses. And there's this, I did a gig in Albany and I got there maybe with an hour to spare, hour and a half, 2 hours to spare. And I'm in front of the venue just listening to music, listening to my sets and stuff. And I noticed, I was like, oh, there's a movie theater here? Oh my God. And it was like it's a landmark, but it was like an old movie house. Mm-hmm. I was like, shit, if I'd known, I would have left a little bit earlier. And I wasn't doing shit. Like, I wasn't doing anything earlier that day that I could have gone up there. So I kind of beat myself up about it. And now that I'm going back up there, I'm like, okay, if I don't go see Fences after work on Friday. Maybe I'll just wait and then I'll go up there and I'll just be up there and I'll, you know, it's just anal nerd.
I get it.
Stuff.
I don't think there's anything to be mad at yourself about.
Oh no! Like sometimes I beat myself up over things that I can't fix anymore. If I've made a mistake and it's just like, God, if I didn't do this, and it's just like, God, this would have been different.
Yeah.
This would have been. But it's kind of like you kind of got to live with the results.
Yep.
Yeah. So I remember listening to LeBron James the night before they won the finals. You know, I don't know. You're not a sports person, are you?
I'm not a basketball person.
But they were down 3-1 in the NBA Finals championship game. And LeBron's always, to me, he's been a champion. He's exceeded expectations. Some people are still hard on him. And he just said, you just got to put it all out there on the line and live with the results. And I was like, huh, you got to live with the results sometimes. You know, there's things you can't change. You got to live with those results.
I think the only results that are hard to live with is when you didn't put it out all on the line.
Right. And I think that's something that as comedians, as artists, you struggle with. Like, did I give it enough? Did I give them? And like, sometimes you feel like submitting your half hour to Comedy Central and making, or putting yourself out there in a way that you never did before. And I was like, I gave them all I could. At that moment, that's all that I had.
Yep.
I gave them everything. So that's, there you go.
Yeah. Or I'll be like, this is really a representation of me.
Yeah.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it isn't what, but that it really was that. And I just let it go. Or sometimes I'll be like, why couldn't I have been at this place earlier? Or why didn't I realize I was comfortable to make these decisions earlier?
And just
like, I just wasn't. I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have done these things at a different time.
Right.
I was a different person.
That's true. Do you find yourself, like, do you ever look back on your life, not even just your comedy career so far, but just, like, your life and think, like, am I the same person? Is the same Leah still there that was there when she was six?
Yeah, I think about this stuff, especially over Christmas. You go home, you see mm-hmm. other people, you see how you changed.
Yeah.
Or I think it sort of is like you go through all these things, and then there's a part of getting back to yourself that you sort of lost.
Yeah.
Or at least me, and then like school and being who I thought I should be, and, you know, maybe acting out, and you know what I mean? And then getting back to who I really was.
Yeah. That's true. I think a lot of times when I go home, I think I just have, like, you kind of go back to a certain role that you had. I think Pete Holmes, when he was doing his TBS show, he had the monologue, and he was just had this really funny bit about, like, when you go home, you go back into those roles that you were when you were a kid. Like, Mom!
Yeah.
He's like, come on, Mom! And it's just like, yeah, you kind of do that. And like, wait, I'm 36.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Wait a minute. But then at the same time, I find, like, that I'm recharged in a way, like, that I wasn't beforehand, you know, like, just that sort of thing.
I'm listening.
You know, it's just one of those things where I do find, like, going home, I think you need to go home, you know. I don't know.
I agree. I need to.
Yeah, I feel like it's helpful. I mean, my parents are like 4 hours away, and
I wish I was closer.
Yeah. I mean, I moved here to be closer to them. I was in Chicago, and then I was just thinking, like, in my early to mid-20s, like, working on my master's, doing theater, like, working really hard. And then I look up, my grandmother's dead. Then I look at I'm at the funeral, and, like, you know, in North Carolina, I'm just looking like, God, my parents are getting old. Then I had the opportunity to move out here. And then just change my life in another way, and then just, like, get to see them. And my parents, my mother used to give me shit, like, oh, you just come home to do shows. But, like, if I wasn't coming home to do shows, I mean, I wouldn't get to see you.
Right.
I mean, that much. And it's an opportunity. Why can't you kill two birds with one stone?
Yeah.
Go do a set, have a good time, and then see your parents and look at them argue with each other and referee a little bit. Like, you can't tell her that. You can't say that to him. That's mean. You know how that makes her feel when you say that. And then you watch football or something, you know? So, okay. So I guess now that we've got all, have we gotten like all heady and stuff emotionally? You've given me some good, you've dropped some good knowledge. I just want to know, what were your thoughts? I guess we could take it from The Force Awakens and then bring it into Rogue One.
Okay.
What do you think?
Let's do that.
Let's do that. Okay. How did you feel about, because I know we kind of like, I texted you, it's like, oh, how did you feel about it? But how do you feel about the reboot?
Well, I felt The Force Awakens, I feel like J.J. Abrams had a large responsibility on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Like I felt, I mean, I did. I was so excited for it because I didn't count the prequels as actually even Star Wars. Like
okay.
I refused to even accept they existed. I felt like it was so far out of the feeling of the originals. So
would you say it's a reboot or just like just a continuation? What would you say?
I would say it's a reboot. Well, I feel like they're bringing it back to the original three.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're sort of putting a new hope back. I mean, it clearly has a new hope-ish.
Sure.
But I also feel like I don't think he had a lot of options. The people who complained about it being new hopey, it's like he had to tie into the originals. Mm-hmm. He had to work in a lot of the characters. That's sort of his tipping his cap. And then at the end of it, you're bringing in new people that are now going to start off to continue on the story. So
right.
I felt like he had a huge role, and I felt like the prequels had, you know, there was so much CGI. There was like I felt like it went so kid-like that it, and then I felt like he circled us back to the humor of like Han Solo and the action and like the real, you know, starships looking, you know what I mean? It looked like the puppets looked, you know, not puppets, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, I mean, I did 2 weeks of minute videos every day for the countdown. I was so excited.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I obviously at this point, if people haven't seen it, it's not my responsibility. was crushed when Han Solo died.
Yeah.
I missed the whole ending and I had to go back the next day and watch it again. I mean, I watched it, but I was like heartbroken, literally heartbroken. I mean, I knew he was going to die. Harrison Ford said he didn't want to do it anymore.
So you knew beforehand, before going in?
I felt like he was going to die.
Okay.
I felt like one of the main characters had to go in order for them to be able to let go of some of the old narrative and continue on.
So you walked out of the theater?
No, I stayed, but I was like,
you were done.
I was emotionally dealing with it. And I knew that Harrison Ford didn't want to be in them. So I assumed, and as soon as he walked out on that thing, I was like, here it fucking comes.
He's done. Yeah.
But I thought it was great. I thought it was fun characters. I thought it brought back a lot of the old stuff. I thought that he had a huge weight, you know, I always kept thinking about his therapist and how much that person was going through with J.J. Abrams being like, well, I mean, people had so much invested in it. And then with Rogue, what I felt like they had was they had a little gift in that it fit in, but it wasn't in line. So they got to sort of stay within the universe of, or the galaxy of Star Wars, but then they got to do their own things because it wasn't in exact line. Like the characters they didn't have to bring back in Luke and work in Han and Leia. They're, so they could use like the outfits and the, you know, the battleships and the, you know, and have all that awesome Star Wars stuff. But then they got to sort of, and I felt like it got to be darker, which I loved. And I felt like this one was less for kids. Everybody fucking dies.
I want to get back to this. I want you spoke to something that I want to touch. Want you to kind of expound on The Force Awakens. How much do you think he handled the nostalgia that people like us feel, and making a newer story? Do you think he married it well together? Or
I thought he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like there's all of us coming in with the nostalgia, and then there's a whole new generation that A New Hope isn't a reference for them, so they won't even get that it's a reboot.
Right.
And I think, I understand why people were like, that's not new, but at the same time, it was like, it's a great story, and he did make it a little different.
Yeah.
And I felt like my nostalgia was sated.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I know a lot of the critics were just saying, like, just people being critical of the film, it relied too much on nostalgia, and it was just like, oh, it's a money grab, Disney, you know.
I wanted it. I mean, I fucking wanted it. Yeah. I asked for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how did you feel?
I thought it was great. Like, I ended up seeing it twice, and that's something I very seldom do. Like, I don't go to a movie twice.
I saw it back to back.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Okay. I saw it opening Thursday, and then I went back Friday morning 3D.
I took off work to go see it. Like, I took a vacation day. And
good for you.
And just, like, talking to Greg Stone about, who's another Star Wars guy, I wanted to talk to him, but he would not answer. He would not return my phone call. And I would say, I guess I need a woman to handle this episode, Star Wars episode. So, unshout out to Greg Stone. I was like, hey, Greg, you know, because he had this really funny Facebook update that had me dying laughing. Like, I was doing an intro to an episode like a couple weeks ago, and I was just like, oh, Greg had this really funny Facebook post. He said Star Wars Miami was great.
Oh,
because they were like near the beach and everything. It was hilarious to me. And I was like, oh, I should hit up Greg. And I left him a voicemail. I was like, Greg, would love to have you back on the show, get your take on Star Wars. And nothing. He put me straight to voicemail. So I'm seeing him this weekend. And
maybe he didn't mean to.
No, I'm gonna yell at him.
He could have been in the middle of something else.
It's fine. I'm gonna yell at him, but I think I saw you post something. I was like, oh yes, Leah. So I thought I'm a big J.J. Abrams fan.
Oh, me too.
And one of the things, like, from Felicity to the Star Wars Mission Impossible, he's always had, regardless of how good the project was, he always seemed to make me feel invested in his characters.
Yeah.
Whatever their backstory was, and it just made me, I care about these people that are on screen. If they're a good guy, they're a bad guy. Like what he did with Kylo Ren, like I thought, like, okay, because, like, most of the time when you see a villain, they're just like, I'm a bad guy and I'm going to do this thing. Or they're kind of having fun, like Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, who I think was probably one of the best villains this side of the new millennium. Like, I would say Heath Ledger's Joker and DiCaprio's Calvin Candy and Django.
This is the side of the millennium. Because I would also say the first bad one was Alan Rickman's in Die Hard. I feel like that was the first character where I felt like a regalness in the villain. Mm-hmm. I also, though, then you would say Wrath of Khan, the original. But where you said that, I agree completely with the Heath Ledger.
Yeah, just like a bad guy having fun. But this one, like, Kylo Ren is flawed. Like, he wants to be like his grandfather.
And he's a bit of a baby,
a
teenager.
He's a millennial. And he's trying, like, it's like, oh, this is interesting. This is funny. Like, this is, and he's going to be a fucking problem. Like, I feel like he's going to be a problem, like, which is good. Like, that guy is going to be dangerous. And then to have a female heroine, Rey, having the Force, you know, was something that, I'm not saying this to placate women or anything. I'm on record saying this.
Okay.
One of my highest listens was, I was talking about, it was a solo episode, and I was talking about female heroines in video games and how, like, if you're playing this like a Lara Croft in Tomb Raider, like, you find yourself being emotionally invested in this character, their well-being, and you don't want anything to happen to them. It almost makes me feel like I feel like I would be, hell, maybe you'd be nicer to women if you played more of these games. I don't know.
I could see that.
It's just like caring for them. Like there's...
Well, they're your lead character.
Yeah. And like these dudes trying to touch... Like the first 15 to 20 minutes of the Tomb Raider reboot, you're trying to keep her from getting raped. And you got to make sure she eats something. And it's just like, I'm locked in. So I care about this person. And then there's other games, like my listeners know, The Last of Us, that I'll talk to you about off mic because I can't talk about this game every episode. But I think you would enjoy. Anyway, remind me to talk to you about it after. Anyway, so I just felt like he handled it well. Like I was going into The Force Awakens being excited and being like, I know JJ's going to give me people to care about. So I felt like he handled it well. I've seen it twice. I bought it on Blu-ray. I got to watch it again. But no, you just made me think. I just wanted to know what you thought about that. Did he marry the two? Like, did he like get you back into the nostalgia. Yeah, and
I thought completely.
And you like the story.
I thought it was great having a woman, like we were saying. Yeah. Like, it's important to have female leads that are just as cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That everybody relates to.
Right.
It's because as a woman, you get tired of relating to the dudes.
Yeah, yeah. I find myself...
I want to see a person. That's why, and this is a completely separate topic, I don't think that people were, that were so against the Ghostbusters and were saying why, it's understood that it was a big deal for women to get to see women just being cool, doing cool stuff,
mm-hmm.
without it being like, oh, they're going to get a guy. How do they look in this? You know what I mean? I just want to get to be a scientist and do cool stuff and make funny jokes. And we don't have a lot of that.
I wish they just had a better script.
Yeah, it was. I understand other things mm-hmm. about it or whatever, but that within itself was a big thing.
Oh, yeah. The funny, like, it's almost like when you have these biopics of these, like, black history people, where it's just like the fact that it's there. It's like, oh my God, this is great. But then the movie could kind of be shit or have holes in it, like a movie like 42, like, which is a decent movie. But it's like, okay, kids are going to see this and then they're going to be inspired or they're going to feel some kind of way about it. Like the Red Tails that George Lucas produced. And it was just like, this movie's not that great, but seeing these guys in the uniform and being black, blah, blah, blah.
It's important to be out there. And the more you have out there, like we have a hundred stories with white guys being cool and doing mm-hmm. stuff and historical stuff or science stuff or future stuff or, you know, sci-fi stuff. We don't have 100 of anybody else doing it. So, of course, you're going to have some that aren't that great.
Right.
But it's like the more we have out there, the more there will be a wide variety.
Yeah.
And they'll get better. It's just that we're only allowed to have one.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody only gets one unless you're, you know, and then so it's like, but I feel like just keep putting them out.
Because for me, the funniest movie within the last 2 to 5 years was Spy.
Oh, I thought that was hilarious.
Jesus Christ.
So fucking good.
So good. And it's almost like I was thinking, like, you got the same guy that's directing it, but I just think, like, there were just pieces with Ghostbusters that didn't come together. Like, it was aight. But Spy, like, that shit, you could make a fucking series out of that.
Oh, that was hilarious.
So I thought that was great. So I guess, I would say, so I'll tell you this, like, I've just come to realize this year that, like, award season is usually my fantasy football, and that's what I get more excited about. And I find myself being more interested in the female categories, mainly, like, the best actress. So I'll look at, obviously, I'm pitting these women against each other, but it's just like,
It's competition.
It's competition.
Pitting the men against each other, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just looking at it like, you know, I'm, like, excited. Because the guy categories are, like, I think, like, right now, as it stands, just between Denzel and Casey Affleck, as we're recording this.
I haven't seen Fences yet. I loved Fences, the play.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, how can I go wrong with, I mean, when does Denzel never let me down?
No, no.
I cried in the fucking preview.
Yeah, shit, Viola Davis.
Yeah, Viola Davis, same with Viola Davis.
Everybody said her snot bubble should get an Oscar.
I mean, so good.
Yeah, so like that, like, so I think she's going to win Best Supporting. Denzel, between like Denzel and Casey Affleck.
I just watched Manchester by the Sea. I really loved it.
I thought it was fantastic. I'm a Kenneth Lonergan fan. 15 and 20 minutes too long.
That's what everybody keeps saying. What I like about that, though, is that he is a sad person.
Mm-hmm.
He has done something that is, I don't think his fault, but undoable as a human being. He's going to live in sadness for the rest of his life.
Right.
And that, I also heard it too long, and then that it doesn't, it sort of just kind of keeps getting, I felt that he was able to find some sort of a compromise.
Yeah.
And so I didn't mind the length because I felt like it mirrored the never getting, a person who is never able to get away from this sadness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you think that's why he couldn't keep the kid?
Yeah. He can't live there. He can't. I feel like I feel guilty because there's spoilers, but he can't get away from his past. It's too hard for him to relive it every day.
Mm-hmm.
He can't be there. It's
right.
It's not a surmountable thing in life where you learn from it, and then, at least for this character, you know, I can't imagine that anybody would move on from that.
Yeah.
In a way that's just, oh, I got over that. You know, I'm sure it's personally he, that's why I thought the scene where he tried to grab the gun was so great. Not that anybody's mad at him or just he's carrying that with him. He can't function and carry it and be in that same place where there's reminders every day.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, he's trying to make it work. Mm-hmm. So I felt that that was, and the length of it, I felt served that purpose.
Yeah. It was just, it just kind of got to a point where it's like, but it was, I loved it. I thought it was great. Like, I mean, I think Michelle Williams is going to fall short from, because of Viola Davis's snot bubble.
Well, I also don't think it's, she's great.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's
that performance, you know.
It's not, I don't think it's of, I think the performance is in that. The kid's great. I also think his friend, who's the person who calls him at the, he meets at the hospital, the man, who's like a man who clearly doesn't cry a lot.
Yeah, yeah. The one that ran the boat with,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's good, but I feel like, I've been saying, like, that last scene between Michelle Williams and Casey Affleck, she was like, okay, it's my turn to get this Oscar nom. Like, not.
Oh, I thought it was a great scene. And I thought she was terrific.
Mm-hmm. She's one of my favorites. Like,
I think she's incredibly talented.
She's a generational great. Like, she's come a long way from Cape Side.
I think she's great.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think that Natalie Portman's going to run away with the Oscar for Jackie, Best Actress.
I haven't seen it.
The movie's okay. It looks really great. She's phenomenal.
I loved Hell or High Water.
Oh, it was great. I bought that for my dad for Christmas. He loved it.
Yeah. And the scene where Jeff Bridges shoots the guy from the back, mm-hmm. Ben Foster's character.
Yes.
And
we spoiled the shit out of everything.
Sorry,
it's
we should
fine,
just stay
fine.
Up top.
Well, I'll talk it up top.
I'm so excited to talk about
no,
it.
It's
he,
good.
That moment where he's happy he got him.
And he cried.
And
yeah.
then he's crying at the yes. same time. And then he's also clearly like physically like getting, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and then he's a man who doesn't cry.
Yeah.
And his friendship with his partner who was shot, you know, it clearly has come to a head in that moment. And all of those feelings in like 10 fucking seconds on his face.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, yeah. how are you so good?
Yeah. 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 It's just one of those things where it's just like, that was fucking, it was just like, it's an original piece, you know, like in the midst of like within the last 10 years, like all these reboots. And obviously I go see all of them. I'm sure you do see most of them, but it's just like, that was like American cinema, like just cinema, you know, like just,
well, it had beautiful vistas.
Yeah, it was just great. Like the monologue that him and his Jeff Bridges and his partner have, like talking about the banks, and it was just like, that's fucking America.
Oh, and Chris Pine's talking about, you know, I'm porn being a disease, mm-hmm. and it affecting everything.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it was like, I was having that conversation with my dad. Like we were, you know, I was talking to him and I was like, hey, yeah, did you watch? He's like, yeah, I watched that movie you bought me. And he was like, oh, it was great. And it made me think, like, and then we could maybe segue back into Star Wars. But it's fun.
I love that. You're like, this reminds me of.
It made me think because, so this summer I was watching The Magnificent Seven. And that I was like, this is kind of like an anti-Trump movie, like this Benetton ad of all these races getting together to try to take down this landowner,
big money.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but just like talking to you and talking to my dad within the last couple of days, like, oh, Hell or High Water is like one of those too, in a way. Like these guys, they're doing it wrong. They're not, you know, following the rules, but they're doing it their own way. They're getting back at the banks. They're getting that back at the, and then Rogue One. You know, you got all these, another Benetton ad, mm-hmm. full of people trying to get at, what do you call them? The Alliance? The Evil Empire?
The Evil Empire.
The Evil Empire. Like, I mean, what do you think?
Oh, I 100% agree with that. I feel like when you watch it now, I think I tweeted, I forget the guy who plays, you know, the guy with the white coat, mm-hmm. who is the person who originally fired the Death Star.
Is that Mendelsohn? No. Is it Ben Mendelsohn?
Yeah, that's okay, the actor's
okay.
name.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, he did such a great job playing Jeff Sessions. Because I just like made them all
see that. Yeah, yeah.
cabinet.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, because I really very much feel like that's, you know, what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was what the original Star Wars is.
It reminded me of Glory. I was thinking about, see that. I was thinking about that, the 54th Regiment. Like, it's almost like,
yeah, everybody it's just, gets it's, they're doomed. Taken, yeah.
And for, I didn't, it didn't click to me until they were like, oh, that gate's going to close and we got to get, and I was like, fuck, they're going to die.
It clicked for me when they said, when they established they had to go get the plans for the Death Star, because then I remembered, then I realized where we were coming into.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, they all die.
How did you feel when you came to that realization?
I was totally fine with it because they weren't the characters that I had the nostalgia for. Because
I didn't give a shit. And, I know what you mean.
But I also feel like they all, she got to fulfill her need to see her dad and feel like her dad did not betray her. He lived his life trying to set it up so she could feel proud of him. She got to see him. That's not right.
I don't know if you
the Spanish guy,
Diego Luna. I just know the guys.
No, this is in Rogue One.
That, isn't that Diego Luna?
No,
Spanish guy.
Or maybe that is. I just know his character's name.
Okay. Okay. All right.
He felt like he'd done things for the rebellion that he wasn't proud of, and he wanted to make it right and do something big. You know what I mean? And the robot K2 got to feel like she trusted, even though if we argue that he has feelings, that she trusted him and gave him the gun and he gave them that last chance.
Yeah, it was fucking like,
so they all got to do their destiny before they died.
It was just sad though. Like, I was watching it and I was just like, fuck. And I kind of felt bummed out because everybody, I saw it that Friday and I was, and I always say, oh, did you nerds like Rogue One? And I was just like, oh, I'm going to see it because I want to see it. And then it's a thing that you have your water cooler conversations about. So it's just like, I was like, okay, I'm going to see this movie. And I was having a bad week. I was kind of bummed out, and then I saw this, and I was like, fuck, they're all going to die. And it was like, God, this is just like glory. This is just like, this is ill-fated. And then I remember a week later, I'm in at the movie theater leaving La La Land, and I look at this Star Wars, the Rogue One poster, and it's like that Rebel, the Star Destroyer, and it's facing down, like a downward triangle, and all the faces of the people that fucking die are on. It was just like, oh God.
But they gave us, because of them, we have the whole trilogy.
Of course.
They gave us the, and then with them then coming in with Darth Vader with a walking through, and then ending perfectly with giving the, I mean, that was so exciting.
Yeah. And that, how do you feel about, okay, I guess that's a great way to, like, unless you have anything more to say about Rogue One.
I loved that they got the humor with the sadness. Like, I felt like Donnie Yen's character was so funny.
Do you think they were gay?
I felt like they loved each other.
Okay, okay.
I felt they had a huge, deep love for each other. I didn't feel like they had intercourse.
No, I just like the way you said, because that was just something that kind of came. I was like, oh, people are saying they're gay. Like,
I feel like they are definitely have a partnership.
Yeah, because they did that with Finn and Poe, like all over Tumblr. Like, they got cartoons of them.
Oh no,
out.
I felt like Finn had like a man crush on Poe in this way, where he's like, "That's what I want to be like."
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Not in a sexual way.
I didn't think so either.
I think that people can love people and have like crushes on them in like a think they're really cool way without it being sexual. Yeah. Yeah. Also, it could have been sexual between Donnie Yen and, but I get that it was more like a intimate male relationship where they'd been together forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense. I just wanted to see what you thought, because I
also got the idea that Donnie Yen was like a monk character. He was a protector of the, you know, the stuff that makes the lightsabers. Starts with a K. I'm just blanking out right now, and I feel like I'm going to get tweets about this. Everybody's like, I can't believe you didn't know that. I can say it, it'll come back in a second.
Sure.
And I feel like those characters are sort of reverent in a asexual way.
Sure, sure. Yeah, because I remember Finn asking Rey if she had a boyfriend.
Oh yeah, Finn clearly liked Rey.
Yeah, so that's what,
which
was like,
I kind of felt sad about that, because why? I miss male female relationships that aren't sexual. I feel like it's so important to have men and women be friends.
That's, you know what? That's interesting that you said that. And then this is going to be another break off. To me, one of the best new TV shows this year was a show called Pitch. And it's about this female, this young woman who becomes.
Oh, I keep seeing the ads for that. I want to see it.
It's actually good. Like, I was like, man, what the fuck? And then I'm watching it. I'm invested. There's a little twist at the beginning. Shit, I really don't want to spoil. Mark Paul Gosselaar plays a veteran catcher that is basically like almost like an avuncular figure to this young woman. And they have this friendship. And then they kind of do something with them towards the end of the season. I don't know if it's coming back. So it just kind of makes you think like, fuck, why did they do that?
Well, people always put that in because sex sells.
Yeah, so it's just like, fuck, no, what if it was just, you know, but...
And I get that Finn was, like, interested in her, so he wanted to protect her and help her out. And I think you could still have all that.
Yeah.
And then it be, their friendship is what, you know, but it was also only hinted at, so...
Yeah, yeah. Where did I want to go with that? So we put a bow on Rogue One.
Oh, yeah. You said anything else before you go back and tie it to... And I just said that I wanted to talk about how funny I thought Donnie Yen was. I thought he was terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
And him and his best friend. I thought that was a great... They were my favorite. And K2, the new robot, who was so funny.
Yeah, he was funny.
And I think it balanced out the darkness. But I think what you were saying was, did I have anything before we... And then we were going to tie it back or finish it up or... Oh, I think it was going to be about the ending because I said something about Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that you were going to ask me about how I felt about how they CGI'd dead people's faces.
Yes, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. That's what... You are so good. That's great. You saved me.
That's what I could feel was coming from you.
Yeah. How did you feel about that?
Well, first off, I thought, you know, the guy who is the commander on the spaceship, battleship, not the commander, who's in A New Hope...
He's been dead for like 10 years.
Yeah, and my boyfriend, I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited he was still there. And my boyfriend was like, dude, he was like 100 years old when they shot it. And I was like, nah, man, he made it. And then I came home and Googled it because I stayed away from reading stuff about it. Yeah. I wanted to be surprised.
I was good about this
one. I only watched the first preview. Like, I just, and then General. Anyway, you normally know this stuff.
Yeah.
I was on a bus. And then I Googled it. It's like, oh, yeah, he died in like 1994. Yeah, and then I thought they did a great job. And I also felt like it made it lead into the story so well to have all those people.
Yeah.
And then the woman who is at the, you know, the lady in the white. And then Princess Leia. I realized as soon as we are that it was going to lead into that scene with them giving this things and she's on the ship and Darth Vader coming through. Mm-hmm. I realized what it was. And then we saw the back of Leia and I thought we would see the back of Leia and she wouldn't turn around. That's how I thought they were going to. And then when she turned around, I was like, fuck.
didn't it end like that?
Yeah.
Like a bump? Yeah. Yeah.
Because it says you gave us hope or you have hope. So it leads into A New Hope.
Right.
I came home. We watched the midnight show. So, and then came home and watched A New Hope up until like 5 a.m. because it was just like right into it.
I need to do that.
And I also like now that Princess Leia, you know, passed this week, I think it's nice also to have it. You know, it's weird to see someone's face, but I felt like they did it so well.
Yeah. I was like, oh, shit. Because they did it with Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War.
Yes.
And I think I was in and out of consciousness around that time. So I was like, what the fuck? Oh, but that's like a younger RDJ or whatever. So I guess they're going to do that now.
I mean, I thought it was really fun with the guys on the Battlestar.
I hope his family got paid or something.
I'm sure they worked it out.
I hope so. So let's talk about you. Let's talk about the stuff you're doing. You just filmed a pilot.
Yeah.
Right?
I wrote like a detective series.
Mm-hmm. Talk about
as like a book.
Okay.
And then... met Frank and Mel Films, who are originally film producers, and they're wonderful people. And I've worked on a bunch of cool stuff. And they were like, "Do you have anything?" They knew my comedy, and do you have anything that you know? And I have show pitches and stuff, but I instead sent them a few chapters because they were like looking to do something more from the ground up. I mean, I think this is how I understand what they were saying. Be involved in something as a producer from the beginning, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, I have this book that this story that I've written. And so I sent them a few chapters of and they were like, we love this. It's really your comedic voice. And it's an interesting, you know, it's a story. It is
Solving Leah.
Yeah.
And what is it about? Just give it like
this woman gets set up to look like she murdered her boss's wife. Okay. And she's been unknowingly paying this account that's like slicing money off for this company that she works.
Okay.
And she's sort of like a people pleaser. So she's, it looks like she's been doing it because she's been like over at the house running errands, all this shit. Unknowingly, she's been getting set up. So it starts with the cops coming over to her house to ask her questions. And she thinks, she like runs the gamut of all the things she thinks she's being blamed for. Like she thinks because she has rabbits in the apartment, and then it's because she stole tampons from the office, and then she thinks it's because she took all these office supplies, and then they are like, this woman's dead, and you know, she's just blown away. So that's what we're doing as a teaser.
Okay.
So then, you know, we would pitch it. Nice. So it's, you know, comedy, but then it's also, I wanted it to be a detective, like there's a story, there's, I have the whole thing. She has to then has to prove that she's innocent. And sort of becomes like a detective on her own, and then also has to deal with some personal issues that have been holding her back and her indecisiveness she has to push through as a person. And then I also wanted to make it, it's a little dark, like people do get murdered and there's like a, people try to murder her and the person who you think is doing it isn't doing it. And you know, I'm very excited about it. It's a whole new, I'm learning tons of things, like we're editing and you know, you learn so much, and it's, I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to do this. And it's been very nice for me to create a story, something else. I love stand up, but it's nice to, you know, I love movies and TV, and it's nice to work on. I've also found it very nice to have something with the election and politics to just dive into, to try to create something with a wonderful group of people who are all, we're all on the same page trying to make something. And it's good for me to learn how to work with other people.
Yeah, because you spend so much of your time like
being a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
Where you're like, no, that's how I want to do it, and that's the end of the story. And you're like, well, there's five other people here that are thoroughly invested, and people see it different ways, and it's just so interesting.
Is that something that you have to work on, or you just like, you seem like you would be, you're open to it?
Well, I'm totally open to it. It's just more like with a, when you're when you're creating a story, like you don't need some of the things you needed because you have the visual of all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, like you, we shot this stuff and I wanted to have straight to cameras because I thought it would be like a comedic advice similar to stand up. And then once they've created this world, you don't need the straight to cameras. It's being said, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, we didn't need it. You know what I mean? Because now it's not just my stand up. Everybody else is bringing in a whole story.
Okay.
With the visual.
Sure.
So it's like a very interesting learning experience.
That's awesome.
So it's, and the, everybody's great. And I think we're all really good match on like figuring out what works. It, I meant more like learning, like, I feel like I'm learning about my writing and what wasn't needed. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's almost like you're learning not to be married to certain things to kind of be like,
yeah. Cause, and I think it's a great thing to learn how to, for like for me, getting feedback back has been like so helpful to also learn how to give feedback. Like people will be like, this is clear. You know what I mean? And then some things are just unclear. And you know what I mean? And it's just a great way to learn. So I feel like with stand up, it's so sensitive because it's your stuff.
Mine.
But it's like, and when it's a story, it's like, what is confusing to people?
Because you're trying to serve the narrative.
Yeah, you're serving the narrative. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great process. And I think it's also, we just have a great group of people working together. And
so you're just like in the pitching process? Like you've
We're still editing.
Editing?
Okay. And then we'll try to pitch.
Cool. So how many days did it take you to film it?
Like, we filmed for 3 days, like very long days. And then, you know, we had pre-prod around it.
Cool. Is that like, is it... Do you know like how long the presentation piece will be, or
probably around 10 minutes?
That's great. Yeah.
And we filmed it, you know, like all union and everything. So if we wanted to end up like submitting it to short film festivals, and if you know what I mean, and whatever, because
you should, yeah.
So it exists because it has a beginning, middle, end in and of itself.
Right. That's great.
So it's been very exciting.
So when you were, is that something that you just had around for a while, like as in
novel form? I wrote it in college.
Wow. Okay.
And then I hadn't finished it, or And then I came back to it last year, actually in November. I always start getting depressed when the time changes and started working on it.
Why do you get depressed? Do you know?
It's just the dark and like, yeah. It's the time is weird. Mm-hmm. And so I got back into it. I added more of my comedy to it, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, and then got really excited about it.
That's good. That's good. What else are you, what's going on with you?
That's been, I think, my primary focus. And then I've been working on my stand-up.
Just been like, do you do the road a lot?
No. I mean, I go out, you know, I work with Lady Parts Justice.
Yes.
And so we'll go out for shows together. And mm-hmm. then I'll do like, you know, I went down to DC mm-hmm. for a weekend for shows. You know what I mean? But I don't do like, I'm gone for a month in different.
Sure. I got you. Yeah. I'm trying to do the road a little more. Hopefully like the tri-state area and stuff. Well, the last time you were on, we were talking about like stuff. What have you liked this past year? What have you liked? Like the stuff that you're watching, or I know you're like a big. What did I put you on? I think I felt like I put you on to some shows that I think you liked. Like, did you like Luther? Did you get into that?
Oh, I love Luther.
Maybe like, what's the?
I liked Goliath.
Is that good? Is that Billy Bob Thornton?
Billy Bob.
Amazon?
Yeah.
So it's worth watching?
I really liked it.
Okay.
I really liked The Crown.
Is that Netflix?
Yeah. About the Queen.
Okay.
I really got into Downton Abbey. I did it.
Really?
I watched the whole thing.
Wow. I would not expect you to be.
Loved it. Pounded it out this year.
I've never seen it.
Well, I like Strike Back. That's on Amazon. It was originally on cinema. It's like these two dudes who are in special forces. Every episode starts out with one guy fucking a chick. Lots of explosions.
Okay.
Ends up with the guy fucking another chick. I mean, it's a lot of tits and butt shots and then a lot of explosions. And I mean, I love it. Very just what I need sometimes. It's really that. I mean, that's every episode is going to go that way.
Okay.
I really like This Is Us.
I hear everybody loves that. I've seen the first couple episodes and I liked it, but for some reason my DVR didn't catch them all.
Oh, I loved
and
I was it. Just like, I'm loving it.
Yeah.
And then obviously Game of Thrones was this year. The
I've never seen an episode.
Love it.
Have you seen Happy Valley yet?
I started it and I was like, I'm not ready for this.
Oh, really? Why?
It felt sad in the way that I feel sad.
Okay.
When the days are shorter.
All right. So that's a good reason.
I need to be mentally.
Because I think I did recommend that. Because to me, some of those best shows, like those BBC shows with those female heroines.
Oh, she's phenomenal. It's great.
Yeah. Like, I need to get back into the fall.
Yeah. There's a new. There's
a new season.
And I want to watch that.
I got to go back because I don't really remember. Like, they got that guy. And then whatever. We'll figure it out. But yeah. So, what about movies that you liked this year?
I think I liked Hell or High Water. I liked mm-hmm. I liked Doctor Strange.
You were one of the few.
Yeah, and I really liked it.
I thought it was fine. I feel like a lot of the comic book heads were kind of like,
You know, I'm not that.
Okay.
I also really liked, and I know nobody likes this movie, and I understand politically, whatever. But I really liked Hacksaw Ridge, about the guy who didn't want to fight. Okay.
I didn't see that. It just looked too.
You got to let it go.
Hokey.
One, two, be in it.
Okay.
You have to sort of let go of that guy. Let it be what it is.
He drop kicks the grenade.
In the scene of what it is, uh-huh. It works. It's
okay.
Also extremely violent. It's like, you know, the opening of Saving Private Ryan.
Oh,
on the
really?
Beach
that
in
level. Even more than like The Revenant? Because I felt like The Revenant
was
on that
level.
Yeah, I
felt it was more. It's just more people dying.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in The Revenant, I felt like it's like man and nature.
Sure.
And also it's so upsetting with the Native Americans and what we know has happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the whole second half of Hacksaw Ridge is like that.
All right.
Straight through.
See, I think when I see it, if I gave Collateral Beauty a chance, but Will, I'm tied to Will's.
Oh, I love Will Smith.
I love Will. So,
I mean, I bought Suicide Squad for Will.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw it. I'm not a comic book guy, but I was like, he was good in it.
I think Will was great. I think he carries the whole fucking movie.
Yeah, yeah.
the scene where they're shooting the guns, mm-hmm. and then he's like, "I'm gonna tell you what I want," and I'm telling her. I love mm-hmm. that scene so much.
Yeah, he's a star. I think he's just been, I don't know, maybe he's too good looking or something that people just hate him.
Who hates him?
Everybody.
Like, I love
they
him.
Shitted on his movie. I just.
I'm not shitting on Will Smith. I don't know anybody that shits on Will Smith.
I just listened to the Medium Popcorn, Brandon Collins and Justin Brown. They you know Brandon, mm-hmm. They just hated it so much.
That movie?
Yes.
Well, I didn't like The Temptress. I don't have a problem with somebody being a model and then being an act. I love Cameron Diaz. She was a model. You know what I mean? A lot of people are great looking. The CGI girl. Are we talking about Suicide Squad?
Oh, you just, okay. I thought we were kind of jumping around. But
I mean, she chose her brother to be a brother. It's just like some random guy in a gas station. And I mean, in a subway bathroom.
A black guy.
Who uses a subway bathroom? You know, you got this good looking guy in a great suit and he's in a subway bathroom. I don't fucking think. And how did you pick him? You know what I mean? Yeah. And then there at the end with the dancing and
that was kind of weird.
But I liked Will Smith in it and I liked Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Yes. They're going to do a standalone. Yeah, I think.
And I think obviously, I thought the guy who played the guy in the prison was kind of there for comic relief.
Yeah, the guard. It was. I thought it was all right. I think the stakes are a lot lower when you get it on Redbox.
Oh well, I just bought it.
Yeah. Did you see it in the theater?
Yeah.
Okay. See you. I'm not judging you. I went to see Collateral Beauty, and I liked it, and people hated it. So.
I mean,
it's fine.
I also, when I went in to buy Suicide Squad, the guy who was working the door goes,
"What are you doing?
You really remind me of Helena Bonham Carter." So that really tainted my whole thing of it. I loved the movie because it started off with a compliment.
Oh, the guy that took your ticket or something? I could see that.
And I was like, oh my God, thank
you. Especially with your hair like it is now, like in a bun.
I was in the best
mood.
But
you're better looking than her.
Oh,
not giving you shit. Not like,
I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, she's fine.
So I was like in a great mood. You could start off the worst movie with complimenting me and I'd be like, that was a great movie.
Yeah, people just went ape shit. That movie and Batman versus Superman.
I didn't watch that. I don't like superheroes fighting each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you don't have you running out of bad guys to fight, so they gotta fight each other. Like
I already have enough inner turmoil.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on it's on HBO. Like I was up at 3 a.m. for no reason this morning and it was on and I went to the theater to see it, but I just kinda had it on. I was like, it's not that bad.
Maybe I'll give it a shot.
It's on cable now, so I have to ask you, since you're a white woman, Trump,
I feel like don't tell anybody.
Trump's America. How are you feeling about it?
Well, I'm so politically active. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
You know, I always talk about how I feel. I volunteer at events. I register people to vote.
Good for you.
You know, I advocate for laws. You know, I feel like I've been very vocal about. So I was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
I vote in local elections. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's important. That's something that a lot of people don't.
I voted in midterms. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that people, you know, because 51% of white women voted for Donald Trump. You know, I think that the patriarchy works in a way that women don't vote in their own best interest because they want to be liked by a certain type of male and begrudge women who are powerful. And people will be like, no, it wasn't that. I just don't like Hillary. And I get why. I understand why some people don't like Hillary. If you're against a lot of the things that I recognize that she's for as far as foreign policy but I honestly believe that you could have her same exact qualities in a man and people wouldn't say those things.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, you know, I was devastated. I was a huge Hillary Clinton fan. I've been a huge Hillary Clinton fan since she was a senator here. I love her. I think she would have been fantastic. I get that she's not a great candidate, that people why she sets people off, but I think she would have made a fantastic president.
Yeah, yeah. I think she would have did good. Yeah, yeah. I think she would have been great. I just feel like I have to, I'm asking it because like there was a, I did a bunch of these like in a block and so when people, and then, so they're backlogged and then when I'm talking to them, like I was like, so what did you think of Spider-Man? Just like some random thing. And so it just, it happened before the election. So it, so I didn't get to get, now I'm starting to get more people's thoughts on it and everything.
I was very sad about it. Yeah. And I'm very worried.
Mm-hmm. I think if you, I just feel like, I think if you don't have money, if you're just a, if you're a regular person, you're going to feel those effects eventually. And the people, I'm trying to work on a bit now, but I'll tell you about it and maybe get feedback from you after we turn this off. But it's like how the people that thought that were empowered in a negative light, I think they're going to feel it and they're going to be upset. They're going to be the ones that are really hurt by it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, and it's going to be like there's things that are being set. Like is he can, is how many judiciary people?
It depends on. I mean, there's one spot to fill now. Yeah. It depends on how everybody else does.
And even at like the state and level and like just like that regime, it's like some.
Well, the people he's bringing in the cabinet have never had these jobs before.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we're not even bringing in. I recognize that people feel like they wanted someone, people feel disenfranchised mm-hmm. and they want somebody who, but this was, yeah. I think that everybody is going to feel that he's protecting big money and that's,
yeah.
I'm nervous about foreign, him upsetting people and starting a, you know, I'm worried about women's rights. I am also very saddened by the divisiveness in this country and all of the anger that you had hoped wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to end there. It's going to be,
I don't know what to say about white yeah. women. I, you know, I feel like there's white women and then there's white women.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know mm-hmm. any women who voted for Donald Trump. Mm.
Or that are telling you.
No, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. You don't think some comedians might have?
Females?
Yeah.
No. I think they could not vote.
Yeah. I've heard somebody that was, I thought was, I was kind of skeptical of on a podcast. I'm not going to say, but I was just like, they kept making these, like, kept doing these verbal gymnastics. And I was like, did you vote for him? And then you think about the class of the person. It's like, well, if you did, I wouldn't be surprised. But it's not like I can't do anything about that, which that's your right to do.
Yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
You know, but just the person, like I voted for Hillary and I was rooting for her, but it just felt really ominous. And I've been saying this like when in conversations with people, just like if you travel and you can see where it's not, it's not that.
Oh, I kind of felt like,
yeah,
just, I mean, I meet tons of people who I know are voting for him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. It was just like, oh God. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. I felt like I saw it coming. I just really thought that Hillary could have done something special.
Yeah. Well, in the words of the great Kurt Vonnegut, so it goes.
So depressing.
God, I do not want to end. Well, fuck it. This is real life, and this has been the Mundane Festival podcast. Leah Bonema, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for coming over.
You've been a delight.
Thank you. You're delayed.
Oh, stop it. Keep going. Where can people find you, the digital version of you?
I think I go to my Twitter at Leah Bonema, and then I have try to keep that LEAHBONNEMA, and then you go to my website, leahbonema.com, and it has all my links, like my Facebook, my YouTube, my Twitter, my Instagram, which I'm trying to get better at.
You and me both.
I'm trying to get better at YouTube, but yes. I feel like that's going to be...
I don't know. What are you going to do?
I don't know. I'm still... The thing about this election is I kind of feel like the world might explode and I feel so much more motivated. You know what I mean? Like I'm going to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get a TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the nuclear fallout.
My goal this year is to do an album.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah. And we'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen.
Knock on wood. Leah, thank you so much for hanging with me.
Thank you for having me.
Take it easy, everybody.
Bye.